What's up, everybody? It's Michael Tucker. Thank you for joining in for the Real Estate Success Strategies podcast. Listen, this is actually live right now on Facebook, and this is also maybe you're listening for the replay on your podcast. So once again, thank you for being here. And we actually have a very special guest with us today, Jason Pritchard. Jason, how's it going, brother?
It's going great. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing amazing. Guys, listen, if you're watching this right now, I want you to know that the guy that we're going to bring on is a power player. This guy is literally killing it. I've been following him just for a little while now. We got connected through a mutual friend, and I've been following his Instagram or his Facebook stories, and I've been just following his posts, seeing some of the videos that he's posted of houses he's flipped. And this guy, this investor that's getting ready to come on and share his story, has done tons of flips. And right now you're doing what, about 50 plus transactions, like flips and wholesales a year. Is that right?
Yeah. Just on the investment side, we're right over 60. And then, you know, we've got some regular retail agent business, on top of that, man. So yeah. So the investment business has grown, considerably, especially we took a big leap, the last 12 to 24 months. It's been interesting with COVID and how all the things have changed the market, man. So I'm sure we'll get into all that stuff, but yeah, we're right about 60 deals.
Love it, man. And so a lot of people right now during this past 12 or 24 months have actually been like kind of playing it safe, playing it low key, you know, just like trying to say, hey, what's going to happen with this market? But Jason, like, his business has exploded during this time because he's doubled down and now he's doing 60 plus deals a year just on the investment side. So I think that's awesome, dude. But guys, before we jump into anything, I just want to remind you that these podcasts are totally free. So if you like this, follow my page, subscribe to the podcast, whatever you got to do, because we drop these every single week for you all. So Jason, man, let's just jump right into this. Tell us a little bit about who you are and how you got started in real estate, because I'm sure that it wasn't just all sunshine and rainbows. I'm sure you didn't, you know, just jump in when they say, hey, I want to flip houses. So give us a little backstory about who you are and how you got into this industry.
Yeah. I got into real estate investing full time end of 2014, kind of beginning of 15 is when I started like the self-education process. And then I did my first deal March of 2015. Prior to that, I'd always been in corporate America. So like all through college and after I graduated college, I had worked in sales and management for two larger companies. And I knew from an early age that I had strong leadership skills. I had strong communication skills, and I had taken to sales. I was just kind of good at it. You know what I mean? And I got kind of sucked in at an early age, and I was making really good money when I was starting. And so that kind of, like, I would say, got to kind of trap me into the rat race that a lot of people get into, right?
Right.
You know, they pay your salary and your commission. And so, I worked with one company for like 7 or 8 years. We were doing technology sales, mainly business to business stuff. And I went through this cycle where I was trying to kind of climb the corporate ladder. I thought, you know, I was just going to work my way up into management and make, you know, $200,000 or $300,000 a year. And that was going to kind of be my life and my career. And I just got really burned out at the first company. And so I thought, you know, maybe it wasn't me. It was just the company, right? And my heart wasn't in what I was doing. And if I go somewhere else, I can make it work somewhere else. And so I went through that same 7 or 8 year cycle at the second company and tried to climb the ladder and play all the politics and do all that stuff. And I found myself in my early 30s. I was like 33 at that time. And I was just at this transitional point, man, where I knew that if I didn't do something different, like I could look around and see the other people that were 40, 50, 60, like my other coworkers,
right.
I knew that that's what my life was going to be. And I just wasn't happy doing that. And I was very fortunate. I had a wife that had always supported me, and she probably believed in me more, like, at that time than I did in my ability to kind of get into real estate. And for whatever reason, real estate was always something that intrigued me. And I think, you know, we get complacent and we come up with excuses on why, you know, we can't leave our job to go bet on ourselves and try these things. And, you know, just, it was a perfect storm of all these different things kind of happening. And I just decided to bet on myself, man. And that was that time leading into the end of 2014, where I said, you know what, I'm going to try this. I'll give myself a year. My wife and I basically made an agreement where she said, you can try this for a year. We'll live off of my salary and my income. You know what I mean? And if it doesn't work, I always knew I could go back and get another job if I needed to. I didn't want to do that, but that was kind of there in the back of my mind. And that was it, man. I was off running. And, you know, the first thing we did was flipping houses. And so we did our first project March of 15, man, and haven't looked back since.
Gotcha. Well, I love it. Did you have any experience in real estate before?
Nothing. It's funny. And I tell the story all the time, but it's true for the people, especially the new people that are out there. I legitimately like knew nothing about construction. I didn't understand
how real. Right, same here.
My wife and I would watch HGTV, and I know it's kind of cliche, but we would watch these shows, and I'd be like, I can do this. Like, I'm smart enough to do this. Like, I can figure this stuff out, right? And my wife would joke with me. She's like, dude, you can't even fix anything in our house. Like, how are you going
to? Sounds like my wife.
Yeah. Like, you know, we go look at some of these properties and some of them would look like they're just ready to like topple over, like from a strong wind. And she was like, how are you going to like fix this? Right. And I said, I'm not going to do it. I know that I've got to get it cheap enough where I can pay somebody to do it and we can
exactly.
Start it. Right. So I think that was kind of the start, man. And I think, you know, you have to condition yourself to know that. Even if you don't really understand like how these things work, you got to have the faith that you can figure it out as long as you just take that first step. And that's what I did. And, you know, like we started that first project. It took about 6 months of not only like self-education, but kind of going through all the pitfalls that I think a lot of people fall into when you're a new investor, like trying to find deals on MLS and trying to go through agents to make offers for you. And I spent so much time doing that. I was very naive. I thought, you know, that you could just dial up some foreclosure like off realtor.com or Zillow and then buy it cheap, fix it up and sell it like they do on TV. And I didn't understand how direct to seller marketing worked. I didn't understand that you could buy deals directly from sellers without having to go through an agent. I kind of had to take a crash course in learning how to do that. And I was completely self-taught. Like I didn't pay for any coaching. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I think that makes sense for the right person, but I just didn't have the money to do it. So I had to learn from like listening to podcasts like the one that you have and watching YouTube videos and doing a lot of like networking the old school way, meeting with people and just trying to figure things out on my own. And slowly but surely it started to click and make sense.
Yeah, I love it, man. It's so true. Whenever you have that drive and that hunger, it's crazy what you can do, right? I mean, just whenever.
Yeah.
You said something earlier, you talked about having faith and just taking that step. And so true. I love it, man. But so what made you attracted to real estate? Because you said you were always attracted to it. Was there a certain aspect like, or something maybe somebody told you long ago, you know, about how much they made or what was that?
One of the things that I've come to understand, Michael, is that we've got to really get in tune with our own internal intuition. Right. And I feel like for whatever reason, there was just something inside me that I was always drawn to it, right? Like, I think I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad when I was still in my teenage years, right?
Okay.
And I read like Gary Keller's like Million Dollar Real Estate Investor and like all these books. Like, I would always be intrigued by like self-improvement. I was always intrigued with like wealth accumulation and making money. And I just didn't know what the vehicle was, right? And I just felt myself constantly being drawn back to that, right? And I've learned over the years to really hone in that intuition and that like inner kind of guiding light that we have. And I felt like, you know, for some reason, I just kept getting drawn to real estate. And, you know, unfortunately, you just kind of talk yourself out of doing it, I think. You know what I mean? Because you've got a stable job and you've got kids, right. You've got all the bills that come along with being married and having two kids, right? And so it doesn't feel safe to, okay, you know, just like leave everything and put all your chips into flipping houses. But you know, I think for me it was just learning really to trust that and you know, just take a chance on myself. That's ultimately what it came down to.
I love it, man. So you jump in, you buy your first house in 2015, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, did that make you a good profit? Was that like a good stepping stone or was that like a loss there? I kind of want to know like how you.
Yeah. So it's an interesting story, man. So like prior to that, I had spent all this time, maybe 6 months, like going through that self-education process,
right,
that a lot of people go on to. Right. And then I spent some time, you know, like doing the route that I see a lot of people do. And I know that it works in some markets, but in my market, it was so competitive that there were just not deals on MLS, but like trying to go through realtors to get deals.
Right.
And then my wife came to me and she goes, you know what? My brother has a house and I know his tenant's getting ready to leave. You should just talk to him and see if he'd be open to that. And that was the first one that we did, man. Like I remember reaching out to my brother-in-law and just saying, hey, your sister and I are going to do this no matter what. She told me about the situation with the house that you guys have going on. Are you open to putting up the house? I'll put up the money to fund the rehab. We'll work together and manage the contractors together and just see, you know, how things work, man. And he was game. And, you know, that was really the first deal. And I remember as we were doing that, I gained some momentum because now it was like, all right, we're doing our first deal, right? So I felt this momentum boost, right? And then I remember talking to the contractor, like as the project was winding down. at that point, I was really starting to self-educate on the direct-to-seller marketing. I remember, you know, I think a lot of people know who Sean Terry is. Like, he had a podcast even back then where, you know, he was talking about how to do your first wholesale deal and what direct-to-seller marketing was. So I would like listen to his podcast and like study and take notes on what you needed to do in order to do like direct mail campaigns and these things, right? And I remember talking to the contractor as that first house was winding down and we're getting ready to sell. And we had, you know, we felt really confident that we were going to make a decent amount of profit on it. And he was like, so what are you going to do next? And I thought, like, I don't know. I want to keep doing this. Like, I don't want to go back to my day job. And that was really like, that conversation was really like, for whatever reason, the tipping point where I needed to get serious about going direct to seller and start, you know, like sending direct mail and start putting bandit signs and start doing those things that I did to kind of get leads coming in. And we did really well. We made like, I think over $50,000 on that first deal. I look at that one as kind of like a deal with like, it was on training wheels really, because the house we had already, you know, we were fortunate enough where my brother-in-law had the house.
Right.
He bought it a long time ago. So there was a bunch of equity already in it. So we, the finding the deal, we didn't really have to do that part. Right. And so that was kind of like, you know, operating almost with a safety net. But then after that, I really got serious about like sending my direct mail out and understanding like,
was that the first direct to seller marketing you did, was direct mail?
Yeah. So it was direct mail and it was bandit signs. Those were the two things. And I can tell you a funny story about how, you know, those things kind of played out, but we closed that deal. It was almost a year really from like, by the time that rehab got done and we sold it, where we monetized it. So I want people listening to understand, from the moment that I made the decision to like, this real estate investing is what I'm going to do, and I started the process of learning the business, it took a year. I quit my job and it took a year to get any money from that deal, that first flip that we did. So it wasn't like, oh, you know, like there was a lot of like sleepless nights at the beginning, because I was making like over six figures at the job that I left. And I was the main income earner for our household. My wife was working, but we took a significant step back financially. And, you know, there was a lot of uncertainty at the beginning, man. And then when that first deal, we monetized it, that was a big step for us. And then when we start getting traction with the direct to seller marketing, which we can get into, that really added the additional like proof of concept that I needed to know that, you know, this was a real thing.
Gotcha. Yeah, dude, I love it. And so it sounds like the direct to seller marketing is what scaled your business, right? Is that, would you say that was one of the key components to scaling your business?
And I think a tip that I would give to the newer investors is what I did and what I see a lot of people doing is I would bounce around from different marketing campaigns, right? Like I would try a list, I would mail it once or twice. We'd get calls and I go on appointments and we wouldn't get offers. So then I would jump to another list, or I would stop mailing because I didn't want to spend the money or whatever, right? And so what I actually got traction on first was bandit signs. And the reason why I believe I got traction was because that was the only thing that I did consistently. For whatever reason, I just set in my head every Saturday morning, rain or shine, I'm going to get up at 6 o'clock. I'm going to put 25 signs in my trunk and I'm not coming home until all those signs were up. Right. And that was the only thing that I did consistently from like when we finished the first project to when I started getting my deals. And that was like March, April, it was like May to like almost September. So there was like this however many month period where we didn't really have anything in the pipe. And I was spending money on direct mail and not making any traction. And I finally, you know, September of 2015, we finally started getting some calls from the bandit signs. I had leads that I was working. And I remember we converted three deals within 45 days from bandit sign calls. It was just weird. It was funny how that all worked out, man. But I got three calls like almost back to back to back. All the sellers were ready to sell. And we took basically all the money that we made from that first deal that we did. And I used that in combination with some savings. Plus I took a second mortgage out on my house and I used those all as down payments with a local hard money lender to come and like buy those three projects. So we went from flipping the first house to within 6 months, I bought three houses that were simultaneously kind of doing at the same time. And then at that point, like I was all the way in, man, because I'd really kind of fully leveraged myself. We cashed in our life savings. We took a second on our house. Like I maxed out all my credit card, like everything, you know what I mean? Like every dollar that we had.
So I want to ask this question. So this happens and you get these three deals and you're like, okay, it's time to go all in, right? It's time. We gotta be creative here. We have to, you know, like you said, liquidate some savings, do some things. Were you scared in that time, or was that more of confidence going into three deals?
I was literally, when I say that, there were sleepless nights and we were really like scared. Like I was, man, like I didn't know what I was doing. Right. And so it's so crazy to think back, like all the things that you didn't know back then. And, you know, that's why I just tell everybody, like, you've got to have faith and belief in yourself that even if you don't know every single step, just take the next step. And then you'll eventually figure out what to do after that. And then after that and after that. Right. And so, yeah, it was a lot, man, because I mean, we're so conditioned to getting like a paycheck every 2 weeks and kind of playing it safe and, you know, doing like what people do in normal society. And so like cashing in my life savings and doing all this stuff, like felt very, very risky at that time. And I didn't really have a lot of people that believed in me besides my wife. You know what I mean? Even like my friends and family were like, gee, what are you guys doing? You know what I mean? Like you don't really, like, I've never heard you talk about real estate. Now, all of a sudden, like, you're flipping these three houses and you're putting all this money into this stuff. And so that's where the mindset, like developing and cultivating the proper mindset to kind of get through those hard times is such a crucial thing, because you can let fear and doubt and negative self-talk, that voice in your head, really get to you, especially at the beginning. And it can derail you if you don't have that under control.
So powerful, man. So powerful. And there's so many people that they get stuck in that learning phase. And I talk about this all the time, but they get stuck in the learning phase and they never take that step out. So listen, if you guys are listening to this right now and you relate to this story and you know you need to do certain things to get to the next level, but you're just afraid, just jump and build your wings on the way down, like John Maxwell says, right? Yeah. So, you know, I'm kind of in the same position you are. Like I'm a beginner investor, only been in for 2 or 3 years. My first year, Jason, just so you know, like totally messed up, lost like $20,000. But our second year, which like last year, our full year, first full year into it, like we've done like probably 6 to 8 transactions. I can't remember. Yeah. 6 to 8 transactions. And now I'm at the point kind of like you, we have to get this direct to seller marketing, because right now I'm like, I have nothing in the pipeline to buy, right? So I'm really curious to go into that part. So you stuck with Bandit Signs, you got these deals. Where did you go from there? Did you continue to do Bandit Signs, or like, did you say, okay, add something else to it? What'd that look like now? And like,
the way I always approach marketing, because I was bootstrapping everything at the beginning, I did not have like a lot of money to invest in the business. I knew that I needed to invest it. And I think my sales background helped me, because once I really understood like how a real estate transaction worked, it was all my old sales instincts, the stuff that I've been doing for the last 15 years, they just kicked in. I was like, okay, this is good. I already understand what this is. I understand I need to invest in marketing because I've got to have leads coming in. If I don't have leads coming in, then I have no opportunity to monetize those leads, right? So I think knowing and understanding that the marketing and lead generation component of this business is very crucial, and you've got to invest some time and money into that is good. So I already knew that. What I did though, because I was bootstrapping everything, was I wouldn't take on a new marketing channel until I proved concept with the first one that I was doing, right? So I realized, okay, Bandit Signs are working. I'm getting traction with Bandit Signs. We're going to kind of keep that fishing line in the water, right? And then everybody was talking about direct mail. I still do mail now, but even back then, that was really, there wasn't calling and texting and the things that you hear about now that a lot of people are doing. So I was like, all right, I'm just going to do mail. And I got very serious about direct mail. I taught myself, like, just through trial and error, like how to pull this, which like criteria to put into your list. How do you like set up your campaigns, and which, like, I was doing all the mailing from my house, like, and it started like just handwriting letters, like, honestly, man, which takes forever. And then I taught myself how to mail merge and print things up. And then I would stuff and seal the envelopes there. And then it started scaling to a point where I had to have my two younger sons, before they would go like play their video games, I would each give them like a stack of like 100 mailers that they would have to stuff before they do that. And then eventually it got to a point where I had to just pay somebody, because it started to become too much to even have my kids do it, right? And I started getting traction with mail. And it's funny, like, to hear like where you're at, Michael, like what I was going through in that year two and even year three of my business was, I've heard it referred to as imposter syndrome, where you find success and you're doing deals, right? but there's still that negative voice that thinks like, oh, maybe I just got lucky. I did 20 or 30 deals at that point, and I was still talking myself out of like maybe me being able to do this like as a viable business, right? And I think for people that are at your stage, you've got to figure out how to get past that kind of imposter mentality and really realize like, okay, this works. This is definitely a viable business. I didn't just get lucky 20 or 30 times in a row. Like what I'm doing is working. Now we've got to kind of put in systems and procedures in place to let these things kind of happen so I can free up my time to do more revenue generating activities. And the next leap for me after that was hiring my first assistant. That was really the big thing, was like hiring somebody to do all of like the administrative tasks and the things that I didn't want to do, because at that point I was the project manager. I had, I think, 15 rentals at that time. So I was the property manager. I was going to Home Depot and like picking out materials. I was meeting contractors in parking lots, just cutting them checks. I was fielding all the phone calls. I was sending all the direct mail out. I was going on all the appointments. I was closing all the deals. I was being the transaction coordinator. I was raising money from lenders. Like I legitimately had no time to grow the business, right? And so I think that will probably be like the next leap for you, is realizing how to really value your time and then being confident enough to pay somebody to do those tasks that really are not worth your time anymore because your business is relying on you to go do higher level things.
Love it, man. And so here's my question for you.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is too deep or not, but what kind of activities do you do currently in your business versus what you used to do? So like, what are you doing right now in your business that maybe, I know for a while you were doing everything.
Yeah.
You decide to focus on.
Here, what I have learned, and I'm self-aware to know that I'm really good, and I still am somewhat of a deal junkie. Like I still kind of get a little bit of a high off doing deals. Like, and I think that's just my coming from the sales background that I had. And I don't know that that's ever going to go away, man. So I know that I'm really good at doing deals. I'm also really good at raising money to do the deals, right? And what I have done is tried to, the first thing that I did was I handed off and delegated everything that I didn't want to do. And I really do think it's as simple as that. Like just on a list of paper, just write down all the stuff that you find yourself doing over and over and over again and put those tasks down. And that kind of builds out like the daily things that the person that you're going to hire is going to do. So I knew that I didn't need to be meeting contractors to write checks. I knew that I didn't need to be like, doing the transaction coordination and like sending these emails and different things, right? Like I knew I didn't need to be like doing lease paperwork and screening for tenants and stuff like that, right? So I just started putting that stuff down on paper and really, really getting serious about how I value my time, right? And what I saw was that successful people value their time, and that's something that's very important to them, and they don't do tasks that are below whatever they want to pay themselves. So if you want to make $1 million a year, your time should be valued like around $500 or $600 an hour. So if you're not doing a task that's worth $500 or $600 an hour, you got to just make the decision to say, I'm either going to delegate this immediately, or I've got a plan to delegate it soon if I can't do it right now. Mm-hmm. And that's the lens I think that you should be looking through things. And it's a progression, man. Like I'm 6 years into it, and it takes me time like to get to this point, right? So don't, you know, with social media and stuff, especially, like it's so easy to look at somebody else's business and be like, oh man, why, you know, it only took them 3 years to get here. And you can't play that comparison game. Like you're running your own race, man. And you just have to be content to move at your pace and just stay outside of your comfort zone, but don't get to the point wherein you're like, you're reckless in the danger zone. You know what I mean? There's a space in between those two areas that I feel like if we just stay there, that's where we're going to see the progress. And everybody's level is different, right? So you just got to know and understand what works for you.
Love it, man. Love it. So, dude, this is so powerful. If you guys are like me, I'm going to go back and probably re-listen to this, re-watch this. Feel free to do that if you're listening or watching right now. Just go back, rewind this, and because this is going to be available forever. But, dude, thank you so much for dropping that information. I relate so much, man, because everything you just spoke was like hitting me right in the heart. Like, yes, yes, yes. So thank you so much. And so how did you go up about scaling, right? So you got into direct mail.
Yeah.
And you started doing that, started seeing success. And I have a few questions. One, what did you do after that? How did you scale up to where you're doing 50 or 60 deals a year. But then secondly, I want to know what marketing you're still doing. Did anything change? Are you still consistent in those two areas? What's that look like?
So here's the thing that really moved the needle in my business. And this is what worked felt well for me and is what's really paying dividends now. Right. And it was networking. You always hear like business, it's a relationship, real estate's a relationship business. Right. And I've never been involved in a business or in a company or whatever where I've seen that more to be true than in real estate, right? And so with these other organizations that I worked with, there would be these networking events and these different things, but my heart wasn't in the business, so I didn't really put any time and effort into doing it.
Right.
One of the things that I did was I really made a conscious effort to get around other high-performing people, because in real estate specifically, local to my market specifically, right? And I did that because I didn't know what I was doing. And I didn't have a coach that I could go to and ask questions, right? And so like one of the things in Sean Terry's podcast was go to a RIA meeting, go to your local RIA, go to meetup.com or go to these different places and find out where the other investors are at and just go there, right? And that was another thing that I did from the beginning, religiously would go to every single, you know, event that we had. And there was two or three groups at that time. And that can be hard because like those meetings at the beginning, there would be like four or five people, you know what I mean? And so it's hard to go there every single month where it's the same people and you don't really feel like you're making any progress. But trust me, like over time, you know, you will make the relationships that you need to open the doors that you need to get to that next level, man. And that's what I did. I eventually, there was an opportunity for me, one of the meetup organizers shut his group down. Because, you know, he just didn't have the time to do it. And there was like 600 or 700 members at that time, but only a handful of people were actively showing up. And so what I would do is I would offer to like present on what was working for me. So at that point, I was getting traction in my business and I would talk to whoever was organizing it. I would say, dude, like, let me come present on Bandit Signs. You know what I mean? Like, this is what's working. People that come want to know how to do deals. Like, I'll share like what I'm doing. And if somebody else wants to use it, then great. So I started making myself a resource to people that way. And that really, when I would present, that would really like get the ball rolling with those relationships. People would reach out to me. We would talk. We would go do different things. I would make relationships with private lenders. And then eventually I took over a meetup group because one of the organizers, you know, he didn't want to put the time into it anymore. And prior to COVID, we were meeting once a month and I would get 100+ people every single month that would show up. And that opened up like all kinds of doors, lending relationships, deals, joint venture opportunities. I mean, you name it, man. You know what I mean? And the combination of like old school, like organic networking plus the meetups plus social media, those three things for me, now referrals are probably 40-45% of my business.
And really? Wow,
that's cool. So like, and those are deals I don't have to pay for. There's no cost, monthly cost in doing that besides the time that I spend in helping people or doing the meetups or going to those different things. And now we just get a big chunk of deals that's done that. So as my direct to seller stuff has scaled, my referral business and the stuff that just comes to me has scaled and even outpaced my direct to seller marketing. And it's because I've taken kind of that go-giver mentality. That's one of my favorite books. That's a book that I gift the most to people is The Go-Giver. And it's coming from the standpoint of giving without any strings attached. Like, I don't believe that there's secrets in this business. I don't believe that, you know, like if I could learn it just by listening to podcasts, then all this information's out there. You know what I mean? So for me, I'd rather just share it openly what works for me. And if you're willing to put in the work, then great. And I've learned that just paying it forward that way, it always comes full circle, some way, some shape or form. You know what I mean? It always pays itself forward. So yeah, it was really that networking that has paid the most dividends and just being a resource in my local market to people. And you know, now, you know, that's a huge part of my business.
Dude, I bet so many people that are watching, maybe even listening, were probably not expecting that answer, right? No, I definitely wasn't. That's so interesting how referrals are like a big source of, you know, deal flow for you. And so this is just a question I have. What percentage of deals are flips versus wholesales in your business?
So that's a really good question. Prior to COVID, 99% of the deals that I closed, the transactional side where we would generate income, was flips. And then I would take the money from the flips and then I would buy rental properties, right? And I partly because I was really good at raising money. I had the I had access to the capital to close on deals, right? So for me, I wanted to keep my lender's money working, because if their money's just sitting there, then you know, they're not going to be happy, right? So part of me, you know, felt a little bit of pressure and a want to close on all the properties. But I transitioned that, really COVID was the impetus. Like, I had wholesale deals before, but mainly out of necessity, because, you know, I was in a position where like I just couldn't raise the money to do the deal, or I just didn't want to do the deal, right? Because of one reason or another. So I still wanted to monetize it. But when COVID happened and the shelter in place happened, I thought that that was going to be all I had ever known was an upward market, right? So if you started at end of 14, the real estate market, if you look at it on a graph, is just an upward trajectory, right? So I thought that was going to be kind of like this thing that's going to push us over the edge. And now the market is either going to flatten or correct or whatever it was going to do. So I had, right before the governor of California had enacted the shelter in place in late March of 2020, I had closed on like 7 or 8 properties, like a package deal and then some other things. And so I did not feel comfortable because I didn't know what the market was going to do closing on additional properties, right? And so we still had a lot of stuff in the pipeline, and I did not stop my marketing. I didn't stop my direct to seller marketing. I was still getting referrals coming in, and I made a conscious decision in March of 2020 to say, all right, I'm going to get serious about wholesaling. Okay. And for, no joke, dude, from that was the end of March, from April to like the first or second week in May, we probably did like $110,000 worth of assignment fees, dude. And that was the most, it was crazy. Like, it was honestly, it was crazy because
just looking at the work of it, you probably did what work versus a flip. I mean, probably not near as much.
And I was talking to my buddies that like have a more of a heavy wholesale business. And I was like, dude, why haven't I not been doing this? Like, you know what I mean? It's like way less stress. It's way less time intensive from like a management standpoint. And I realized like the way that my business is structured and with the amount of people that we have and the amount of contractors that we have, it limits the amount of flips that we should be doing. And there were times in my business where I exceeded that limit. I closed on more properties that we can handle. And it made life miserable for me, right? Like, it creates a cash crunch. Properties were sitting, contractors were ripping me off because we're hiring new people that we weren't used to working with, and they would start jobs and then not finish. My project manager was stressed out. She was not happy. I was unhappy. And so it made me kind of hold that whole COVID situation made me reevaluate the business. And as I started implementing more wholesales, I also saw the market creeping back up. The flips that we had closed on, they were going for 10,000 over asking, 15,000 over asking, 20,000 over asking. So I was like, all right, I'm going to be very smart. I'm going to start buying again, but I'm only going to cherry pick the ones that I know are going to be a significant margin and that are not like these full blown, like crazy fixers, right? So it had to check a couple boxes for me in order to feel confident closing on it. And that, like, my business, it went crazy, man. It just went like this. I mean, it was nuts, like the upward trajectory, because we were getting all this money from the wholesaling. And then instead of our typical flip doing 20 or 25,000, it was doing 30, 35, 40, 50,000, right? And it was just like this whole kind of like perfect storm of events that, you know, we just rode this wave through 2021 or through the end of 2020. And now my business is in a place where you will take on a certain amount of flips. Everything else above and beyond that, we're going to wholesale. And if we know that we can wholesale it and make 25, 30,000 bucks, I'm not going to flip it unless I can make really double that. And if we're not going to double it, then I'm not even going to deal with it. You know what I mean? And it's just been such a good place. And we've continued to keep adding doors. We've got 70 plus units that we own right now. So, you know, we've really found this good balance between like, you know, where my business needs to be operating and the type of deal flow and being more flexible with the exit strategy. All of those things, you know, kind of clicked and fell in place this last year.
Love it, man. It's so different. A lot of times I feel like we get so stuck in what we are doing, right? Into how things have been running in the past that we don't open our minds to what is possible. But you did the opposite. You opened your mind. And because of that, you were able to take your business to somewhere that you probably never thought you would be able to reach this soon anyway.
Yeah.
So that's amazing, man. And, you know, what did your systems change with wholesaling now that, or is everything stay the same, like all the people, the management side of it? What did that look like?
It was my mindset changed, honestly, Michael. Like, and I think if anybody's going to take anything away from this podcast, you need to understand that, like, learning the fundamentals of how a real estate deal works is, it's important, but it's not more important than having your head screwed on straight every single day. And I think if you didn't have the right, if I didn't have the right mindset going into COVID, I would have just turned all my marketing off. And that would have been a huge mistake, because I saw a lot of people do that. And you and I both know that marketing is isn't a faucet where you just turn it on and then leads come out. It takes 60, 90 days to kind of ramp that up. And a lot of people lost out on a lot of opportunities from like the middle of 2020 to the end because they stopped, right? And so I think you've got to get your head screwed on straight first and spend as much or more time, you know, in self-improvement and cultivating the right mindset as you are investing into your business, because both of those things are crucial. And, you know, I think if you can do that, it helps you to overcome all of the ebbs and flows and the peaks and valleys that I think that you're going to deal with from being an entrepreneur and being in real estate, man, because there are, you know what I mean? You can't, there's some really high highs and there's some really low lows. And you've got to be mentally prepared to deal with that stuff so that you don't just go on this roller coaster ride. So I think my systems and our processes didn't really change. The big thing that changed was it was being more flexible about the exit strategy and making a decision from like, what's the best for our business right now? So instead of forcing us to flip or forcing it to keep it as a rental, which I made that mistake too. There was times where like adding doors to my rental portfolio superseded everything else. So I would force deals into becoming rentals, even when it would probably have been better just to flip them or wholesale them, right? And just learning through experience to say, okay, we're kind of at our capacity for like closing on deals, right? So like, does it make sense to wholesale, or does it make sense to joint venture on this, or does it make sense to do something else? And that answer is going to be different for everybody, because everybody's business is structured differently or at a different place. And so I would say just learning how to do to evaluate the deal and pick the appropriate exit strategy for where you're at in your business, right? And as you continue to bring money in, then strategically invest into things like systems and processes that will help you scale, but not just scale for the sake of scaling, right? Like not just wanting to do 100 deals because you see somebody else on social media doing 100 deals, right? Ultimately, it's how much money can you keep, not how much money that you can make. And that to me was something that I learned this year is I made more money than I ever have ever at any point in my life or business this year. And I actually worked less, which was crazy. Like the amount of hours that I put in, the amount of stress was way less. And my wife and I could travel more and do these other things that I'm like more interested in doing than running like the biggest like flipping operation in California. You know, I'm not interested in doing that. Like I'm not interested in like these, like it's a vanity number more than anything else, right? Like saying, oh, I flip 100 or 200 homes or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I don't care about that. Like I am interested in building a business that fits into my life and the things that make me happy versus trying to fit my life into some business model.
Dude, so powerful. Thank you so much for that. And, you know, here's my question. We'll end this out with this, because I know you're a busy guy. You're out there doing deals and things like that. But what's your business? What's the vision for it right now? I know you said you want to create a business that kind of fits your lifestyle. What is that? And what do you kind of vision for your company?
What I envision is I would like to see some year-over-year growth just from the amount of deals and profit that we're bringing in. So what I would like to see this year is I've spent so much time on the networking and the referral business, right? And that is at a point where you know, we've got that going, and that's going to kind of happen just based off of the amount of effort that I'm putting out already. And it's even with social media and other things and just building a track record, that's kind of snowballing without me having to do a lot more than I'm already doing, right? So I feel like we've got some really good momentum there. And we're still doing deals besides referrals and the networking. Direct mail is my number two lead source. Cold calling is my number three lead source. We're still doing all the other things like bandit signs and buying from wholesalers and that type of stuff. I want the direct-to-seller marketing to kind of keep pace with the referrals. So I'm going to just continue to invest into the things that are working, right? And just going back to the well and keeping those things doing and kind of optimizing and dialing that stuff in. And so investing into a better CRM to kind of help track and manage that stuff, getting better about tracking my lead sources and my KPIs and those different things, frankly, which I'm not really great at doing. And keeping that direct to, because the problem with referral business for me is that it's great that it comes at a very low cost, but usually that referral is tied to me working directly with the seller. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Or like I have to be the one that goes out and talks to them, right? Whereas the direct to seller marketing, they don't know who I am. Like my face isn't on the postcard. Like I'm not marketing my, like, you know, Jason buys houses or whatever, right? Like, so like somebody on my team can go manage those calls, and I've set that up to happen, and that's already kind of happening. So the acquisitions piece is less time consuming for me on the direct to seller side than it is on the referral side, because I can send somebody on my team to go lock properties up and go close on them, right? So that's another reason why I want that side of the business to grow. And then after that, just really getting serious about what makes me happy and the time that I'm spending. I love my business and I love real estate, and I, you know, like it doesn't feel like work to me. So I don't like, I don't ever have those feelings that I used to have when I worked my old jobs, where like it was Sunday night and now Monday's coming around and it's like, oh God, like I don't want to go into the office. Like I'm excited, dude. Like I sometimes have to pull myself away to do this, and I don't know how long that's going to last. And so I want to get the business cranking, and I really specifically want my rental portfolio and the other investments that are a little bit more passive that are going to spend, that are going to kick off money without it being tied directly to my time. I want to continue to grow those things and just live a life without limits, man. Like my wife and I set a goal of traveling once a quarter 3 years ago, and we've been doing that for the last 3 years. Now I told her that I want to do it once a month. So we've been traveling once a month. We leverage a lot of the spending that we do in our business to cover our travel, which is cool. So like, you know, we don't pay for hotels and we very rarely pay for flights and that type of stuff. So it allows us to do all those things, right? I mean, I think that's kind of where I see, you know, the vision for 2021 is kind of fine tuning those things and continuing to, you know, to build the business and my income streams around the life that I want to live, not the other way around.
I love it, man. Love it. I can't wait to see you do all those things, man. I've already been watching you travel and doing different things like that. It's exciting. Well, man, where can people find you at if they want to, you know, keep up with your journey? Is there anywhere on social media that they can?
It's probably the best place. I've made a conscious effort going back to last year to really be more like open about like the things that I'm sharing, and just trying to be an open book and share wins and share losses and just be completely transparent. I believe in transparency. And I think social media, it's a double-edged sword, man. You see a lot of this stuff and you think, you know, people just have to realize that you're just watching somebody's highlight reel, right? And there's not a lot of people that I feel are really, truly transparent on there. And, you know, you're going to hear more about my wins, because if I was posting nothing but losses, then I wouldn't be a successful business person. You know what I mean? So I feel like you're going to hear me talk about those things. And I just like to be 100% honest, man. So Facebook, you'll see me on there. Instagram, I think those are the two platforms that I'm the most active on. You can always reach out to me and just message me on there. And I'm more than happy to, you know, I personally respond to everybody and I try to get back to everybody as fast as I can. But if you send me a message, give me a little bit of time and I'm more than happy to, you know, to answer any of your questions or even set up a time to talk if that's what you want to do.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you guys so much. Well, guys, thank you for being here for another episode of the Real Estate Success Strategies podcast. Listen, like I said, subscribe, leave us a review, let something happen here. Just comment, let us know what you thought about this podcast, because Jason just poured out his heart. He did an amazing job. Dude, thank you so much for all that info. And that's helped me tremendously. Like just now that I'm going into my business and we're scaling up to new heights, I'm able to come at it with a different perspective because of what you gave. So thank you so much there, man. It is amazing. And continue doing this, man, because you're gifted at speaking. I can already tell you're gifted at sharing your heart. So keep doing that, brother.
I appreciate, man. I appreciate you letting me be on your platform, man. And like I said, I'm happy to be a resource for you or anybody else. Like I said, I genuinely, somebody helped me along the way. So I don't mind paying that forward, man. And I think that's an important part of this process is as you're climbing the mountain, you got to throw a rope down for somebody else to come up behind you, man. So if I can be a resource to you, just let me know.
Love it. Well, guys, that concludes today's episode. Like I said, you can find these on my official Facebook page here at Michael Tucker, or you can find this on the Real Estate Success Strategies podcast on any major podcast platform that you listen to podcasts on, whether that's Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen, go ahead and just go back and listen to any other podcasts that we have. You'll find value in them. I'm sure of that. So guys, have a great day. God bless you. Jason, nice chatting with you, brother. And we'll talk with you very soon.
Thanks, Michael. It's great talking to you, man. You have a good day.